The one that the Grabster mentions in here was the Vincent Foster case, who was the attorney who killed himself in 1993, who worked for the Clintons, or the Clinton administration.
Mm-hmm.
And he was,
I think, a Whitewater guy, too. So he'd been with the Clintons for a while.
Well, when he committed suicide, there were photographs of the scene, and they were not made public. So conspiracy people filed an FOIA, whatever report you have to fill out, and said, we want to see these photos.
Yeah.
And they said, no.
Yeah, apparently the guy still managed to get 4 Polaroids released, which was Herculean effort. Yeah.
Good for him.
If you want to spend a full day at least, just go ahead and type in Vince Foster.
Oh, I'm
and
sure.
And click on the whatreallyhappened.com thing on it. It's extensive, exhaustive.
I'm sure.
Dale
Earnhardt more recently was, he crashed and was killed at the Daytona 500.
Yeah. Did you ever hear he apparently died like flipping off the guy who who spun him out? Yeah. That's what I heard.
Hey, that's a nice way to go out at least.
Yeah.
Screw you, buddy.
Yeah.
The Florida courts rejected the plea to release those photos in the newspaper. In the Supreme Court, they said, you know what, we're not even going to entertain this case. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Florida passed a law, another lover boy law, to prevent these photos from being released.
Really?
That's a lover boy law. Man.
Okay, I was silent because I was scanning my brain for another lover boy line, but I couldn't think of one.
Chuck, even more recent than Dale Earnhardt's death, that whole kerfuffle over his death photos. There's been a couple, but one was the News of the World phone hacking scandal.
I don't know about that one.
Okay. Let me enlighten you to the despicableness of what News of the World was capable of and was doing for a while.
It's not Weekly World News.
No, it's
my favorite
news
paper.
RIP. That was
Oh, good. Is that not around anymore?
No, it's not. It's a News Corp, which is a Rupert Murdoch-owned paper that's now under. It was headed by a woman named Rebecca Brooks, and she's now gone. As a matter of fact, News of the World is gone because of all this. They were hacking like the voicemail accounts of like everybody, the royals, celebrities, but the one that was really just really awful was the voicemail of a 13-year-old girl named Millie Dowler, who in 2002 went missing. While she was missing, this is big news in England.
Yeah.
News of the World had some private detective hack her voicemail and were listening to her voicemail messages. And the mailbox was full, so they started deleting them so that people could leave more if possible, so they could hack more and report on more.
What were they trying to get?
Just any information they possibly could,
because
the girl was still missing. She was dead at the time, but
so
no
were they
one
trying
knew
to help,
that.
Like get clues?
No.
Okay.
They were trying to get more leads. A full mailbox and a dead girl who's not getting her mail isn't going to help anybody as far as News of the World was going. So they just deleted some after they'd listened and written stories on them.
Trying to get news story leads, not case leads.
Exactly.
Okay.
All stories. One had any idea they were doing this. So the girl's parents thought she was still alive and was deleting her email or her voicemail.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a very big deal. It also threw off the cops, too. It hindered the investigation. So everybody who has anything to do with that has now been executed by the state in Great Britain.
Well, that brings up a good point, though, is this stuff a crime? And it sort of depends on the law. HIPAA actually does enforce criminal penalties if you knowingly share medical information, like selling Madonna's pap smear, for instance. You could be put in jail for that.
I almost just did a spit take, a genuine one.
Really?
Did that happen?
No, it was in the movie Slacker.
Oh, okay. Man, that was close.
But I bet stuff like that does happen for sure.
Oh, yeah.
More often than not, though, there will be civil penalties instead of criminal ones, and you won't be going to jail. But you can slander someone after death.
You can.
Well,
depending on what state you're in.
They don't call it slander. You can say what you want after death.
It's well, there's anti-defamation laws.
Right.
In, like, California is one state. That was the only state I could find. In most states, it's like, no, you can say whatever you want about somebody sure. after they've died. But there's something of a movement toward getting anti-defamation laws in place for the deceased. And it's based on this philosophical debate, like, can you harm a dead person?
Right.
What do you think? What's your opinion?
I don't know. It seems like it would be a nice thing for your privacy rights to extend after death.
Sure. But I mean,
in the name of respecting the dead.
Right. But so in the US, you've noticed like most of the court cases were looking out for the family, the survivors. This is about like the person, the individual, even people who like you don't know any of their survivors. They lived long enough ago that no one has any idea.
Right.
But the whole basis of it is that like through our lifetime, through our life's work, our accomplishments, our reputations, we build this thing that's called an identity, a legacy,
mm-hmm.
and it survives us after death. And that's what can be defamed, and that's how you can harm a dead person if you believe that you can harm a dead person. And so that's kind of the basis of the drive to
right.
get people on board, like, hey, let's all just
sure.
be nice about dead people. But
well, and in this day and age of the electronic life, your emails, your Facebook account, like, it brings up a whole different... Can I tell you a really, really sad, tragic story?
Always.
Speaking of Facebook... I found a old friend from 25 years ago on Facebook by chance, and I was like, oh, haven't thought of her in literally 25 years. She looks great. How's she doing?
Mm-hmm.
Sent her a friend request, blah, blah, blah. I was kind of on her Facebook page, and then I saw a photo of her with her kid that said, and someone said, like, very bittersweet to look at this, and I thought, oh, man, I guess her kid must have passed away. That's awful.
Mm-hmm.
Scroll down a little more. She had passed away like 2 weeks previous.
Wow.
This girl of like in the middle of the night passed away. I was on her face, had already sent the friend request, and I was like, oh my God. And for some reason, it just stuck with me for a few days. It was,
I
haven't seen her in that long, but I was just like, all of a sudden, there's this Facebook page with pictures everywhere, and hey, this was me last week.
Right.
And now I'm not here. And then, you know, her kids had posted. You know, like they kind of took over her account where people were leaving memorial messages
right.
and things like that.
Yeah.
So, and they bring up in the article, you know, typically 90 days after an inactive account, they'll shut it down. I don't know if that's Facebook specific, but.
Well, Facebook apparently has a policy in place where if you can prove you're a family member or something like that, they will revert control of it to you.
Yeah.
It basically becomes a memorial page. Like,
yeah.
Yumi was friends with DJ AM
oh, really?
On Facebook for some reason. Yeah, so and she still is, and his page is now like a memorial page. People
yeah.
post on it like a couple of times a day, every day still.
Well, and I think that's what Facebook's trying to create here with their whole new system that's rolling out is like, this is your life.
Right.
Collected.
Yes, and we own it. Yeah. If you want to know more about basically what we're talking about is whether or not you leave a digital legacy... afterward, stuff to blow your mind. Our colleagues Robert and Julie covered that, didn't they?
Yeah, stuff to blow your mind.
So you can search that on iTunes, or you can go to the Stuff to Blow Your Mind RSS page just by searching Stuff to Blow Your Mind RSS on your favorite search engine. And if you want to read this really good article by The Grabster, you can search Do You Have a Right to Privacy After You Die?
Yeah.
How about privacy after death in the search bar at howstuffworks.com?
That was the Stuff You Should Know episode called Do You Lose the Right to Privacy When You Die? Originally podcast at howstuffworks.com on October 20th, 2011. This is the radio version of the Stuff You Should Know podcast. Now for part two, Josh and Chuck examine dogs and dog time, specifically the canine perception of the time-space continuum. This episode was originally podcast on September 17th, 2009.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles Chuck Bryant. Chuck Bryant. Yes, nice, Chuck. We'll get to that in a second. Do it again. That's awesome. Chuck's barking because this is Stuff You Should Know, and this particular Stuff You Should Know is entitled, How Do Dogs Perceive Time?
And I said in dog language just then, I don't perceive time.
That is up for debate, my friend. Up for vigorous debate.
All right.
So, Chuck, let me do a little intro here, a little lead-in, segue, whatever.
I know, I spoiled your parade there.
What do we call them these days?
What are we what?
Segues, lead-ins, intros?
Intro.
Schmeckles?
Schmeckles.
Chuck, about a year ago, this month, France,
mm-hmm.
made history, legal history.
How so?
They actually used a dog as a witness in a criminal case.
Did they get the dog to, like, bark at someone?
Yep.
Wow.
I kid you not.
Well, like an intruder?
At the very least, and I hope I'm not a Bangladeshi newspaper here, because I found it in the Daily Mail,
uh-huh.
which is not known for satire, but it can be known for poor reporting from time to time. But
so you may have egg on your face soon?
We'll find out. But there was a dog named Scooby that was brought into a...
sounds less believable.
It does, doesn't it? I should have forwarded you this article. There is a dog named Scooby that was brought into a murder case or a hearing to see if there was enough evidence to try a man for murder.
Wow.
For something that was ruled a suicide. And the dog barked furiously at the alleged perpetrator.
And they gave him a Scooby snack?
Yeah. So that was the last I heard. It was from a year ago. But there was some concern over whether the dog's memory would serve it or not, because it had been 2.5 years since the incident.
Okay, that makes sense. And that's kind of key to how dogs may or may not perceive time.
It's the best I could come up with.
That's great.
Thanks. So what that betrays is a sense by at least the reporter and the courts in Paris that dogs have a memory, that they if they have a memory, then they should be able to perceive time, right?
Right.
Chuck, let's talk about this. What is time?
Oh, dude. Are you kidding me? Well, you know my whole deal with time. I've said it before.
What?
Well, time is just abstract. Numbers on a calendar and hands on a watch aren't time.
Well, yeah, no. What you're talking about is the human construct of time.
Yes.
Based on 24 hours,
which
right?
is all kind of arbitrary.
Seven
really.
Days in a week, 30. Well, not necessarily.
Well, not anymore. It's not.
Here's why. It was actually kind of ingenious that we should come up with a 24-hour day, because we have these things called circadian oscillators.
Yes.
Which are they're the fluctuators in our circadian rhythm, which
hormones.
Is what makes us fall asleep at night, wake
right.
up in the morning.
Body temperature.
Get hungry at certain times.
Neural activity.
Right. The neural activity and the hormones are reactions to things like changes in temperature
yeah.
that are on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
Things like... the changes in natural light.
Right, sure.
Right? So our reactions to these are circadian oscillators. And if you put them all together, like sleeping at night and waking up in the morning, that's our circadian rhythm.
Right.
But these circadian clocks actually exist on about a 24-hour period.
Well, that makes sense then.
So, but like you said, days on the calendar and all that, that is a human construct.
Yeah, yeah.
So what we're trying to get to the bottom of is whether or not dogs can perceive this, not necessarily the human construct of time,
right.
but of time in and of itself, which is essentially a past, present, and future.
Exactly. And I know that one thing that we will talk about, and maybe we'll talk about right now, is you have three dogs.
Do you have any dogs?
I have two dogs.
What?
Shut up. I have two dogs, and I'm actually fostering two feral puppy rescues, which you know. So right now I have four
dogs. Do you
want
to get rid of those two dogs? Because we could get rid of them like that if we plug this on this podcast.
Yeah, we're kind of picky about who we give them to.
Okay, well, how about this? If you're not a creep and you love dogs...
and you live in the East Lake area
of
Atlanta.
Send us an email if you want one of Chuck's puppies.
Very cute.
Yeah.
So anyway, if your dogs are anything like my dogs, they... and actually my cats, too. They know when the food bell is going to ring.
Sure.
Actually, they start, Emily calls it food abuse. They start the food abuse typically about an hour and a half before they typically get fed, every afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And in the morning, we feed them pretty much straight away in the morning, so they know then. But my dog Lucy, dude, comes in the room and looks at you with her head cocked, stamps on the floor with her feet, and goes, "Hur! Hur!" And I'm waiting for her literally to one day say, "Feed me." One day, I told Emily, if she did that one day, I would be surprised for about a second.
So, Chuck, here is where we reach the bone of contention.
Right.
Sorry for that pun. I'm not Jonathan Strickland.
Your dogs do the same thing, though, I assume, right?
Well, no, my dogs are fed constantly. They always have food. They, for some reason, I lucked out, and they just eat whenever they're hungry.
I can't imagine that.
It's pretty cool.
My dogs eat their food like it's the first time they've ever been fed.
I've seen that before. My dogs, they're pretty laid back when it comes to stuff like that.
Are they fat?
No.
Really?
No, they're healthier than I am.
Well, they don't
They're healthier than a lot of people I know. No, they regulate their food intake on their own. It's weird.
That's so weird.
But I know what you're talking about. So the question is this. Do your dogs know, based on past experience, that food is coming at a certain time of day? Not necessarily like 5:35 p.m., but say, as far as the dog's concerned, when sun is low in sky over there.
Right. Are they Native American?
Right, yeah. I was going to say. No, they're like Italians playing Native Americans.
Right.
What, you think I'm dumbbell? So.
Or is it a circadian oscillator? Well, that's the circadian oscillator.
It could be, yeah. It could be. What that is, they're using their memories of past experiences to predict the future, which is episodic memory,
right,
which is our construction of time. Or is this semantic memory, which is totally different but related? Do you want me to go into this? Because this is outside research.
Well, I have no choice then.
Semantic memory is, all right, Chuck, let's say that you have brain damage to your frontal lobe.
I do, in fact.
Which is where your episodic memory is,
right,
is located. That's the region that controls episodic memory, which is learning from experience,
right?
You could conceivably learn how to play chess, right?
Right.
But you won't remember where you learned how to play chess.
Right, much like they say a baby learns how to walk and talk, but they don't remember that day you taught me how to walk.
Right, they don't have to relearn crawling or walking or talking.
On a day-to-day basis.
Right,
sure.
Because they learned it, and that's semantic memory. That's like facts and rules and possibly motor movements or
right,
whatever. Or, you know, if I run into this wall, it's going to hurt my face because I'm crawling.
Right, right.
But they don't remember,
somebody teaching them,
like, come crawl to me, that
sure,
kind of thing, right? So, yeah, that's semantic memory. Episodic memory would be like, what did you have for breakfast this morning?
I had a fruit smoothie.
You had a fruit smoothie.
I remember what the light looked like. I remember what it smelled like.
That is precisely episodic memory. And I should probably give a shout out to T.R. Zental, who I'm like just blatantly ripping off right now. The chess example was one of Zental's examples of semantic memory. And what you've just said is almost word for word an example of episodic memory. You said, you know, you remember these other details.
Sure.
Whereas had you said, I had a smoothie this morning, I must have because I always have a
smoothie,
right? That would be, well, not the burping part, but if you always had it,
yeah,
then
yeah,
that'd
yeah,
be more like semantic memory.
Okay.
So we reached the question, do dogs perceive time, or are these reactions that appear like they're keeping track of time some way, maybe through a circadian oscillator based on semantic memories? And there's been a lot of studies that are not necessarily on dogs, but on other animals, right?
Yeah. What's this crackpot's name?
Roberts.
No, what's this guy's name? Dr. Roberts?
Yeah. Oh, I have to say I'm going to take issue with Dr. Roberts.
Yeah, William Roberts. He's an animal cognition researcher.
Right.
Right off the bat, you're taking issue with that.
Not that part.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, he did some studies on pigeons and primates, to name a couple, and long-term and short-term memory as far as remembering a sequence that they would, I guess the pigeons would peck it out and the primates would tap it out and to get a reward. And they found that they have pretty good short-term memory for this kind of thing.
Right, which is what that's working memory, right?
Yes.
But and long-term is reference memory?
Yeah, but as far as the reference goes, they couldn't remember it that well if there was a big break in between.
Right. Roberts actually wrote a very famous paper as far as animal cognition goes, where he basically said that he concluded animals are stuck in time. And I just made air quotes for those of you out there listening in podcast land. And by stuck in time, he means that they live exclusively in the present, that they don't have the capacity for forming long-term episodic memory.
Episodic is the key word.
It is very much the key
because
word.
Because I know at home you're saying, no, I taught my dog to sit when she was one. That's not the same thing. That's what you're talking about with the baby learning how to walk.
Right. But that's not – there's a lot of examples out there in nature that would kind of belie Dr. Roberts's idea that animals or dogs are stuck in time. Well, a good one is squirrels foraging food.
Stocking up for the winter.
To store for the winter and doing it year after year after year. I believe Roberts actually addressed that and says – but they continue hoarding even when their stores inexplicably disappear, which I assume some researchers went and stole squirrels' nuts and then studied them to see what they would do. I don't understand that at all.
I don't either. It seems like that would make them want to hoard.
Yeah. So I kind of have an issue with that one a little bit, but it's possible I'm not entirely seeing that point all the way.
I don't see the point. I'm not quite sure what he meant there.
But there's also one about the bananas, right, Chuck? There were some primates that were given choices between more or less bananas.
Yeah, and predictably, at first, if you offered an ape one banana or two bananas, they're going to take the two bananas.
Sure.
But they found that when they started increasing the number of bananas, like 10 compared to 20, they would just go for the 10 bananas. They wouldn't. He thought this meant they can't. They have no concept of the future. Like, maybe I should take these bananas because I might be hungry tomorrow.
Right. Now, that's I think Roberts fails to take into account social structure.
Sure.
Right? We know that we could use 10 bananas for tomorrow, but we also have things like preservation techniques or refrigeration available to
us.
That's
what I thought, too.
And if you go back in time just a few thousand years ago, to hunter-gatherer societies or even hunter-gatherer societies that are around now, they don't store food at all. They forage for what they need right then, and that's what they eat. I would imagine that would actually explain a lot of the primate decisions. There's no real reason to. Their society isn't set up on this idea that I need more and more to protect myself in the future.
Exactly.
I don't know that necessarily means that they don't have any concept of the future. I think that there's all these other explanations out there.
Right, and they may, like one, when I read that, the first thing I thought was maybe they've never taken more than 10 bananas in their life because they've never needed to, so it doesn't even dawn on them that should be something they would do.
Exactly. Well, I guess what we're saying, both of us are on the same page here, there are other explanations.
I agree.
And I think one of the things I took from this article was that Roberts found it conclusive that animals are stuck in time by cherry-picking some studies here.
Yeah, we kind of disagree with them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other factors. I know that my dog Lucy is stuck in time at 5:30 p.m. every day.
Yeah.
Because she's always asking for the food.
So I guess another problem, it's entirely possible, Chuck, that our brains just aren't big enough to they're not as big as Robert's brain.
Maybe.
Did you ever hear that, like, goldfish have an 8-second memory span?
I've never heard that.
So I have, right?
You have a goldfish in your cube.
I do have a goldfish here.
You're a cutie.
Yeah, Molly. She's very cute.
Is her name Molly? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But having an episodic memory makes it almost impossible to think about not having one. So, like, if a goldfish does have a memory of 8 seconds, does it mean that every 8 seconds all of its memories are purged, like getting rid of the browser history in your computer? Or as new experiences come into the present, are older ones pushed out after they hit this 8-second maturity level?
Right. And how do they test that on a goldfish anyway?
Perfect, Chuck. Perfect segue. Here's the biggest problem. Robert's position is almost inherently speciesist. You familiar with this term?
Yeah.
This is a legitimate term. I'm not making this up.
Animals have no souls.
Animals don't have souls. It's impossible for a dog to be happy because that's a secondary emotion, and dogs aren't self-aware enough. There's a competing explanation for all this. Speciesists tend to rely very strictly or remain very strictly within the structure provided by the scientific method.
And all his studies here, he probably came at it from that frame of mind, too.
Sure, right. But there's another way of looking at it, and that is that humans simply haven't come up with tests that are clever enough to get definitive proof that an animal can experience happiness or can or is aware of time, the future, the past, that kind of thing. You can take that way too far. Like after, you know, test after test after test that proves the opposite, you could still conceivably say, well, there's a test out there that we haven't come up with yet proves that they can. But I think that the testing that has been done is very much below that threshold so far.
Yeah.
I don't think we have a clue what animals are capable of as far as consciousness goes, because we have such a loose grasp on our own consciousness.
Sure, and we can't delve into an animal's brain and see what they think, and they can't tell us anything. I guarantee you one thing. I bet you Dr. Roberts is not a dog owner.
Agreed,
because you have dogs, dude, and I guarantee we're going to get tons of mail from people saying, are you kidding? My dog displays emotion every day. And, you know, I guess Caesar, the dog whisperer, might say, you know, that's you're putting your human construct on the dog's frame of mind.
Yeah, anthropomorphizing.
Yeah, I don't know, man. My dog is, they're both pretty emotional.
Well, yeah, anthropomorphizing is the go-to ammunition for speciesists.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to say that anybody who's saying, like, no, animals can't be happy because it's secondary emotion and they lack that sense of self-awareness
right.
that's required to experience a secondary emotion is a speciesist. But the two often go hand in hand, and it's really interesting that there's a line drawn right now between people who think animals don't have a soul
right.
and people who think animals can be happy and all of the implications that come with that.
Jerry, I bet you think your dog has a soul, right?
Jerry's saying yes.
Jerry just gave the sweetest face and nodded yes.
Yeah. Yes, so I feel like Chuck and I just opened a big old can of worms, so we'll see how this plays out in the emails, right?
Yeah.
If you want to read more about dogs perceiving time, to answer the question, according to Roberts, no, dogs don't perceive time. Time's a human construct consisting of a past, present, and future, and dogs pretty much live in the present. Chuck and I don't necessarily agree with that one. You can go on and type in dogs perceive time in the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com. Since I just said that, it means it's time for a whole mess of listener mail.
You are right. Josh, this is, we're just going to call this Muppet Mail. And we are going to go on a little longer than usual with our mail because the Muppet podcast, I think we will all agree, was sort of a sea change episode.
And plus, we just want to see how long this background music actually goes for.
I know. I mean, we literally got better response from the Muppet Show episode than anything we've ever done, I would say. Wouldn't you?
Yeah.
The Henson Company twittered about it.
Yeah. Heather Henson, we should say our colleague and friend Jonathan Strickland of Tech Stuff fame, his sister
knows
is friends with Heather Henson, and it went viral thanks to him.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So we got great response. It's clear that everyone loves the Muppets, and so I wanted to go just through a few of these because I didn't want to just do one. Quickly, before we start, and we never do this, but a guy sent me an email, and I kind of touched a chord with me. So I want to quickly give a shout-out for Joe to Beth in Elwood, Indiana. And Joe just wants to say that he thinks that you are a pretty cool chick, Beth.
Chuck, are you playing matchmaker? Is that why you're wearing nothing but a diaper and you have those wings on your
back? I'm not saying. But Beth and Elwood, Joe thinks you're a cool chick, and so do we. Because she actually sent us a Alien Hand Syndrome video, which rocked.
Cool.
That's good. I'll show it to you.
Yeah,
quick couple of things that we didn't mention in corrections, first of all. I mistakenly referred to the Children's Television Workshop as the Children's Television Network, so I goofed that one.
You're thinking of Home Shopping Network.
I was.
For kids.
We did not mention every Muppet movie. We did not mention every Muppet venture because
I want to elucidate on this. We did that on purpose. First of all, we mentioned the three that were in theatrical release.
Directed by Jim Henson.
Yes. And by first of all, I mean that's it.
Right.
Right.
So a lot of people said, how could you not mention Muppet's Christmas Carol? And we wanted to mention everything, but We would have been sitting here reading things all day long about the Dark Crystal and other Muppet ventures. So we chose to only do the Henson ones.
Which I have to say, Dark Crystal, that creeps me out still to this
day. And that
day.
Was Henson too, because I know people are going to write and say that was Henson, but get over it.
Right.
We had a guy named Peter wrote in, and he told us about the Muppet Whatnot Workshop.
Yeah, at not Goldman Sachs. At
F.A.O. Schwartz.
Yes.
And you can go to New York City, and you could do it online, but I looked and it's down right now. But
I think it's just around Christmas time or the holidays.
No, they got bought out by Toys R Us, I think, so that's down right now. But you can still go to New York, you can go to the Muppet Workshop, and you can build your own whatnot.
At Goldman Sachs.
It costs about $100, and he sent me a picture of he and his little cute daughter with her Muppet whatnot. So you want to thank Peter for that. And actually, God, I'm going on and on, but Peter had one of the big Fu Manchu mustaches like me.
Yeah.
Did I tell you about this?
No.
And I said, very cool, Peter. Thanks for sending this. I said, looks like you picked up a mustache while you were there. And he wrote back and said, no, I got that at the Sam Elliott Supply Center down the street or
nice.
Something like that.
Nice.
So Peter's a fun
Peter
guy.
Packed a picnic supper.
So that is all for the corrections. Now we have a few emails.
Oh, my God.
Josh and Chuck, I just listened to How Muppets Worked. I was excited to hear you talk about it because you mentioned the costume designer for Miss Piggy, who happens to be my Aunt Callista.
Oh, wow.
If you look up the Muppet movie, you can see her in the costume and wardrobe department on IMDb. She worked closely with Henson, and I've actually seen a picture of her with Jim Henson setting up some Muppets in Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas. She left the Muppets, I think, when Jim Henson died, but we still see her once a year. Mm. That's from Sam.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh is, in fact, eating a Reese's cup. On to the next one. Hi, guys. I love your recent podcast. I was listening and thought I would mention that Jim Henson studied Muppetology at University of Maryland. I know this because I went to school there, and there is a Jim Henson Studies program, and it is our claim to fame. I didn't know he went to my school until I went there, and there is actually a little statue. It's a bench with Henson sitting on it and Kermit sitting on the back of the bench, and they're kind of holding hands.
That is beyond cute.
It is very cute. So, and she also says that, this is from Alicia, that they have the rights to It Ain't Easy Being Green and Rainbow Connection, so their marching band actually plays that.
The University of Maryland?
Terrapins.
Terps?
Yeah, go Terps. Moving on.
Man, listen to this background music, Chuck. It is never
I know. We compared the Muppet Show to 30 Rock, and Phil of Linden, Washington has this to say. I was trying to imagine Sesame Street would look like in real life. Two little boys getting their own apartment, a giant bird that sleeps behind garbage cans, a few scattered, seemingly sensible adults who really have no jobs and nothing else to do.
No, Mr. Hooper had a store.
Oh, that's true. Finally, it hit me while working my job as a special ed classroom assistant. It is one big government-operated group home facility for special needs children and adults. Think about it. Bert displays classic Asperger syndrome. They share a bedroom and obviously have some adult taking care of the rest of their house. Oscar is schizophrenic with his mood swings, and a worm is a best friend, as is Big Bird with his imaginary friend. Was it Snuffleupagus?
Uh-huh.
And tell me Grover's not dealing with severe ADHD and Cookie Monster from manic bipolar tendencies. And the jobless adults, Gordon, Susan, and Bob. So that's from Phil.
Are they jobless adults or the caregivers?
He says they're jobless adults.
All right.
I've got two more. Jerry's laughing at how long this is going, but I warned her. I was listening to your fantastic podcast, and I had to write in. I am getting married at the Henson Soundstage next year.
Sweet.
So cool. He and his wife-to-be toured the soundstage. It was like being behind the scenes at the Muppet Show. We were honored as the first wedding ever to be hosted there. And I asked him, I wrote him back, he's like, dude, what's the hookup? And yeah. He had none. He just asked.
Huh.
They rent it out to people, apparently, for things, and no one's ever thought to have a wedding there.
Wow.
And that is from, he gave us some facts, but we don't have time for that. That is from Dan and of TDFillustration.com, because he's a cool artist. I wanted to plug that from Dan. And finally, Josh. From Jake in Newport Richey, Florida, says, I was an accident of the 80s, and I missed the Muppet heyday, but I was lucky enough to have three older sisters and parents who had the foresight to ensure that they taped several seasons of The Muppet Show. So Jake is a big fan of The Muppets now, and he told us this fact, which I did not know. Since Jim Henson's death, Ralph the dog has not spoken and is seldom used, and it's my understanding that they do this out of reverence to Mr. Henson because Ralph was his favorite Muppet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Chuck just wiped away a tear.
Teary eye.
You sweet old softy.
So that's Muppet Mail. We got hundreds of pieces of mail and good blog response. And
yeah.
Thanks for sending them in. It was a good show.
Yeah, and we'll try to keep you supplied with more good shows in the future. If you want to send an email and try to make Chuck cry, it's not that hard. You can send it to stuff. podcast at howstuffworks.com.
That was the Stuff You Should Know episode called How Do Dogs Perceive Time? Originally podcast at howstuffworks.com on September 17th, 2009. You can subscribe to Stuff You Should Know and other podcasts at howstuffworks.com as well as on iTunes. This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, and online at WFMU.org.
Love, and to be true,
fine wine here on the Downtown Soulville Show on WFMU. Got a great show for you tonight. All kinds of interesting stuff. Got a Veterans Day set. Got a little Norton Records tribute. They're celebrating their 25th anniversary this weekend with four big nights at the Bell House, including one tonight. All kinds of great stuff. Soul 45s till 9 here on the Downtown Soulville Show. Let's hear first from an outfit called the Cellos.
This is a story of a crocodile. All names have been changed to protect the innocent. Chasing me all day. Can't seem to shake. Can't seem to get away. He got my friend. Better pull over to the side of the road. When it gets close, I'll play like a mole. You got my other friend. This crocodile ain't for being told. I think I'd better climb this here palm tree, and then it won't be able to capture me. You got my other friend. To be, because real soon he'll have eaten me.
Get fired. world can't fight.
If I can end self-burgers, play my love, could kiss my baby and drive my car. Oh.
Don't care if the world can't fight.
Downtown Soulville Show, Mr. Fine Wine here. Just heard from the brilliant Escurita. It was called Escurita and the Vula. Before that, Duke Jenkins and his orchestra with Mr. Jojo Spoons did Mambo Blues. Lowell Fulsom, Love Grows Old, although isn't he singing Love Grows Cold? Definitely says Love Grows Old on the label at any rate. The Vibes did Let the Old Folks Talk. The Cellos did The Juicy Crocodile. And that instrumental at the very beginning of the show, Coco Mamie by the Mo Kaufman Quartet. 201-200 WFMU, the Soul Line. You can email me at finewine@wfmu.org. As I mentioned earlier, Big Norton Records 25th Anniversary Spectacular all weekend long. Started last night. Great show tonight featuring The Raining Sound, Jackie and the Cedrics, and an all-star Norton R&B review with The Mighty Hannibal, Andre Williams, Lonnie Youngblood, Melvin Davis. It's going to be fantastic. Unfortunately, it's sold out, so I'm not even going to bother giving you all the info. But we're going to hear a few choice tracks from some of the artists appearing tonight. Just a few. Escurita, by the way, that record I just played. Unleashed on the broader world by Norton Records, of course, at the beginning of their run 25 years ago. Great stuff. Congratulations, Norton Records. Happy birthday. Without Norton Records, I got to say, WFMU would not have sounded anything like it does the past 25 years, and that's pretty high praise. All right, so here, without further ado, appearing tonight at the Bell House, Andre Williams.
About a real fine chick, but she was really on the ball. And when it comes to getting what you want, boy, she had it all. She was a real mean Jane. She was a mean, real mean Jane. She was a mean, real mean, real mean, real mean Jane. She was the meanest Jane I'd ever seen, and her ways was very, very sweet. But it's one thing about this girl, she'd rather pump a chump's head than cop. She was a real mean Jane. She was a mean, real mean Jane. She was a mean, real mean, real mean, real mean Jane. So you women, if you got a good man, you better keep him close by your side, 'cause if he drags his jeans train, she should let him ride. 'Cause she's a real mean Jane. She's a mean, real mean Jane. She's a mean, real mean, real mean, real mean Jane. So you women, if you got a good man, you better keep him close by your side, 'cause if he bags your jeans train, she's sure gonna let him ride. 'Cause she's a real mean Jane. She's a mean, real mean Jane. She's a mean, real mean, real mean, real mean Jane. She's a mean Jane. She's a mean. But she's a mean, real mean Jane.
I said, now, baby, tell me what's your name? She said, my name is a Mary Jane. I said, now, baby, can I take you home? She winked her eye and said, now, daddy, come on, 'cause she is my kind of girl.
My kind of girl.
I said, now, baby, won't you shout?
of my life. Some sweet girl, won't you be my wife? How I can love you for eternity? How don't you know that you were meant for me? Cause she is my kind of girl. Yes, she is my kind of girl.
My kind of girl.
I've been around the world, I've been a lot of girls, but she's a my kind of girl. I say now, baby, won't you share my life? I say now, baby, won't you be my wife? How I can love you for eternity? Don't you know that you were meant for me? Cause she is my kind of girl.
My kind of girl.
Yes, sir. My kind of girl.
No, I've
been around the world. I've been a lot of girls. But she's a my kind of girl.
Lonnie Youngblood on the Downtown Soulville show. He'll be appearing tonight as part of the Norton Records 25th anniversary spectacular at the Bell House in Brooklyn. But it's sold out, so if you don't have a ticket, don't bother going. Also taking place tomorrow night and Sunday night. Both those shows sold out too. But tonight, Lonnie Youngblood's band featuring Mick Collins on guitar will be backing Andre Williams, Melvin Davis, the Mighty Hannibal. That's amazing. So this Lonnie Youngblood track we just heard, Come On, Let's Strut. Before that, Hannibal did My Kind of Girl and Andre Williams' Mean Gene. Okay, so once again, happy birthday, Norton Records. I couldn't be more appreciative of all you've done over the years. God bless you.
Come on, don't you know I got to come on and teach me right now.
Yes, sir.
Patty Jerome on the Downtown Soulville Show with No More Tears. Before Patty, Eddie Hill on the Great Thelma label out of Detroit did Baby I Cried, Betty Smith, Much Too Much, and Joe Lewis, Teach Me Right Now. This is Downtown Soulville on WFMU. I'm Mr. Finewine. I spin Soul 45s every Friday from 8 to 9 p.m. You usually can squeeze in about 24, 25 of them. Been talking more than usual tonight, and I want to stop that. Okay, as promised, some Vietnam-themed records for Veterans Day. Here's Donald Jenkins.